What is it? Pick up the studio phone. Hold on a second. I got it here. Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, hello. Let me talk to Mr. I had the name right here. Oh, yeah. Bill London, please.
You mean Bob Linden?
Yeah, whatever. You know, the guy with that cockamamie, what's the word? Vegan? No, wait. I spelled it out so I could say it. Oh, vegan. Yeah, the vegan radio show. What is it? Go Vegan with Bill London?
Well, that's Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
Whatever. Anyhow, my name is Adolf. It's Adolf W. Mussolini. I represent the Republican Nazi and L parties, Homeland Propaganda Office, and Mr. London.
Linden?
Well, whatever. You just might say, this is your lucky day.
Oh, by the way, so
you vegans, I mean vegans.
Well, that's vegans.
Well, whatever. Yeah, you vegans don't even eat fish or eggs or butter?
No animal ingredients.
Whatever. So, Bill,
Bob,
whatever. Maybe you've heard about one of my big talk show clients. He's been in the news a lot lately.
Well, you don't mean Armstrong Williams, do you?
250,000 smackaroos. Easy money. And for what? To talk up No Child Left with a Behind? Oh, sorry, that was its original name, but eventually Bush vetoed it. It violated the administration's no-honesty policy. So anyway, London, we've had our eyes on you for the last 4 years, ever since you started polluting the airwaves with this vegetarian stuff. And frankly, the boss is a little upset that, well, since he ain't got weapons of mass destruction to talk about anymore, people will realize what's really killing them, you know, and destroying the earth and hurting animals more than they ever imagined. Now, I know, London, you got these high hopes for this show. I know what you think.
Oh, new one. I know, and you're going to be the hottest controversial vegan talk show host on the face of the planet.
Yeah, but has Paul McCartney stepped up to the plate in 4 years so you could buy radio airtime in New York or Chicago or D.C. or Miami or London or Paris, everywhere? Maybe you're going about it all wrong, Bill.
That's Bob.
Well, whatever. Maybe you should just start calling yourself Armstrong Linden.
What do you mean by that?
Well, now that the boss has kissed up to his bomb-making cronies and then gave a nice country to his oil company cronies, his meat industry cronies are saying, hey, where's the beef? So us guys was thinking, well, why do you vegans gotta be so rigid with this not eating animals thing? I mean, that excludes a lot of people. So maybe if you just broaden your definition a little, what's wrong with having steak eating vegans, huh? Maybe you can announce that to your radio audience too. You know, everybody knows it's cool to be one of those vegans. So why make it so hard to be one? Just because you eat steak. I mean, even the Bush daughters.
You mean Daiquiri and Tanqueray?
Whatever, them. Yeah, they want to be known as vegans also. They think it's cool. They just don't want to give up the meat to do it.
Well, listen, I should have told you, really. I didn't mean to pick up the phone in the studio. I thought it was the engineer. He wanted to talk to me for a second. But
listen, London, I think I can really make it worth your while. You know, how many hours would Armstrong Williams have to have worked in Walmart to come up with 250,000 smackaroos, huh?
Wow, 250,000 smackaroos. That's a lot of jars of Vegenaise. I could buy a lot of jars of Vegenaise with it.
Well, now, of course, London, we're not talking Armstrong Williams caliber payments here. You know, we had to extort, divert about $12 million from D.C.'s Homeland Security for the boss's inauguration party. And we're not asking you to do a whole No Child Left Without a Behind campaign. But Mr. Williams will never have to worry again where his next plate of foie gras is coming from, and you won't have to either.
Well, no, I would never eat foie gras myself anyway. The exploded liver of ducks and geese who are force fed. I wouldn't want any of that.
Well, whatever. If you could just go on here, maybe tone down the mad cow thing a little bit. always so negative about it. Yeah, words like incurable in humans, fatal to humans. Maybe you could call it the perturbed cow, or slightly bothered cow, or out of sorts cow. Look, I really have to go now. Listen, London, I'm prepared to offer you as much as $50. What? All right, $75. I mean, you're just a vegan radio show. You should be happy we care enough to manipulate you anyway, like we do with the ABC and NBC BS Fox propaganda channel. Listen, I really do have to go. The lights are flashing. The show's about to begin. I have to go now. Greetings once again. Welcome. Bienvenidos. Hola. Aloha. Anyhow. Namaste. Konnichiwa. Bonjour. Guten Tag. Salam. Shalom. Peace. Now, from the propaganda script writing center of the entertainment capital of the Velveeta covered depleted uranium McNugget prison industrial complex, this is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, now recognizing steak eaters as vegans too, also now dispelling the myth of mad cow disease. They're not really mad, they're just out of sorts. Note to Armstrong Williams' agent, send check made payable to Go Vegan and mail to P.O. Box 220025, Newhall, California, 91322. Okay, now that that's out of the way, oh, you think I have to defend why steak eaters could be considered vegans too? It has nothing to do with a bribe. I mean, a donation. I mean, a check. Look. If people who eat dairy and eggs and even fish and chicken sometimes can call themselves vegetarian, yes, I'm a vegetarian. I'll have a cheese omelet and a glass of milk. Well, I can call a steak eater a vegan too if I want to, if it fits my needs. You know, it's the kind of age in which we live. I got that feeling watching some of the, congressional confirmation hearings recently. Congress, you know, congregation of cons, gathered, from my point of view, to confirm a couple of torture generals. Well, you've got that one dude who already is making me nostalgic for John, shove the Constitution up your Ashcroft. This guy's ready to do to you what Ashcroft did to the Constitution. Then you have the dude from Nebraska, Joe Hans, getting ready for that mad cow seat vacated by Ann Venomman at the USDA. Joe Hans grew up on a dairy farm, so you know he's hardened and jaded to the plight of little newborn babies being slashed into veal. He said his first priority is to get Japan to reopen its borders to United States beef. Note to Japan, mad cow isn't so serious. We all have to die of something anyhow. Plus, the latest reports are the cows aren't actually mad. They're only perturbed, slightly bothered, and out of sorts. Note to Armstrong Williams' agent, remember, send that check, made payable to Go Vegan, mail it to P.O. Box 220025, Newhall, California, 91322. Regarding Ashcroft's replacement, the new torture general, Alberto Gonzalez, the one who will protect your civil liberties so that you can speak out on behalf of oppressed animals, you know, the one who will determine your treatment when you are arrested and characterized as a terrorist for speaking out in front of a fur market. Well, what can I tell you here? What of the history of Alberto Gonzalez? And actually, there's a commercial running on television. You can go to californiapeaceaction.org, californiapeaceaction.org. A TV commercial has been put together in opposition of Alberto Gonzalez, but why would we disapprove of a Bush nominee? Well, let's see here. If you go to the Center for American Progress, you see that, well, as White House counsel, Gonzalez approved memo authorizing torture. Okay, so this here, it's out of
Newsweek, New York Times, Washington Post, different articles are mentioned here. In August 2002, Justice Department memo was vetted by a larger number of officials, including the White House counsel's office and Vice President Cheney's office. According to Newsweek, the memo was drafted after White House meetings convened by George W. Bush's chief counsel, Alberto Gonzalez, along with Defense Department General Counsel William Haynes and Cheney counsel David Addington. And it's comforting to know that the next torture general is somebody who sits around in his spare time and thinks up ways of torturing people, like if you have a wet cloth over someone's face and you drip water on it, the prisoner thinks he's drowning. Oh, just all sorts of wonderful techniques, which he approved. Gonzalez, also here from the Center for American Progress. Gonzalez believes many Geneva Conventions provisions are obsolete. That reported upon in Newsweek, so you can read from that article there. Gonzalez admitted his views could undermine U.S. military culture, and you can read about that New York Times article, also something in Bloomberg on that. Gonzalez blocks information from Congress, so sounds like a great replacement for John Ashcroft, huh? Death penalty memos, Gonzalez negligent counsel in providing information to Bush when he was the fry baby of Texas there. Memorandum, just a case of incompetence there. Gonzalez told Governor Bush he could ignore international law. Gonzalez gets Bush out of jury duty to keep DUI secret. In 1996, as counsel to Governor Bush, Gonzalez helped him to get him excused from jury duty, a situation that could have required the governor to disclose his then-secret 1976 conviction for drunken driving in Maine. And what else do we see on our new torture general? Oh, accepting donations from litigants. In the weeks before hearing oral arguments and making a decision in Henson versus Texas Farm Bureau Mutual Insurance, Justice Alberto Gonzalez collected a $2,000 contribution from the Texas Farm Bureau, which ran the defendant insurance company in the case. In another case, Gonzalez pocketed a $2,500 contribution from a law firm defending the Royal Insurance Company just before hearing oral arguments in that case. And Gonzalez has had a past history involved with Enron, so he's perfect to be in our GovEnronment. And then, of course, you have Johans, who, well, just by the nature of being appointed to the chief of the USDA, puts him in a position where he's the manager of torture, 10 billion animals to be killed this year, all of those beheadings, and so many of the animals fully feeling, being decapitated, being skinned, dismembered while fully conscious. And so we have a couple of wonderful nominees in those positions. Oh, I am so stressed out from, the occupation of the White House, of Congress, of the Supreme Snort, that perhaps I need to relax. Maybe once again remind myself that I should take up something like yoga, huh? Like I was telling you last week, we had that article called Conscious Carnivores. I picked up Yoga Magazine and Yogi Times. And I did want to, I didn't complete reading it, so let me see if I can quickly go through what the propaganda is here. I wonder if Albert Gonzalez was a ghostwriter for this. It says it was written by Mike Stokes. Mike Stokes at Freedom Yoga, freedomyoga.com. His email, mike@freedomyoga.com. So what Mike says is yogic tradition generally dictates that in order to be a yogi, you must also be vegetarian. But I believe that it is possible for there to be harmony between the practice of eating meat consciously and mindfully and living a yogic life. Since eating meat involves directly or indirectly killing an animal or a fish, like a fish isn't an animal. How do we eat meat and simultaneously promote love and unity, Yogi? And how do we eat meat in a way that honors the first tenet of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras? Am I saying that right? P-A-T-A-N-J-A-L-I-S. Patanjali. Yeah, I've been practicing that all week. Patanjali. Okay. The first tenet of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, ahimsa. Ahimsa can be translated as non-harming or non-killing. Do we simply stop killing all forms of life, he asks in this article? Is it a difficult question? Oh, he says, it is a difficult question for which there are many perspectives and points of view, especially if you want to rationalize. I am editorializing a bit on here, by the way. All animals must feed on other plant or animal matter to live. Therefore, some form of life must die in order for us, the human animal, to live. Killing, then, is a part of the raw truth of life. We need the plant or animal flesh of another being to survive. One may choose to be a fruitarian who only eats food that naturally falls from the plant, thereby not contributing to the harm of any life. But even that path does not completely avoid causing harm or death to other beings. Every time we break a blade of grass, we have harmed or killed another life form. Of course, it's a life form without the kind of feelings that animals have or a central nervous system or anything. The challenge of living a yogic life is not to completely abstain from the act of killing, but instead to honestly and courageously embrace the reality of our part in it and participate in it in the most harmonious and loving way possible. It is unrealistic to believe that we can be a human and never harm another being. By connecting ourselves consciously and lovingly to the life and death of the animals we eat, we can honor the animal sacrifice. And at the same time, honor the traditions and teachings of yoga. That's quite a trick here. Let's see what Mike continues to say. The act of taking an animal's life for the sake of nourishing our bodies, which right there is an oxymoron, because eating an animal does not nourish our bodies. Anyway, that can be, Mike says, it can be a conscious and sacred act. And experience from my own life illustrated this for me. A few years back, I participated in a month-long indigenous wilderness survival course. One day, the leader of the program gathered all of the participants in a dirt clearing in the forest and brought out an elderly-looking sheep. He said, quote, "Now you are all going to get the opportunity to participate in the sacred killing of an animal to feed the community. This is May. She is going to give her life so that her flesh and spirit may nourish you. Those of you who do not want to participate can wait in the back of the camp." I stayed, said Mike. I had felt like a hypocrite for a long time since I was a yogi, but also a meat eater. Well, his feelings were true. It was hypocritical. He said, I had tried vegetarianism many times, yet for a variety of reasons, it hadn't worked for me. So kill an animal because I'm not working hard enough, huh? I bet May certainly would have wanted Mike to work harder on his vegetarianism. So Mike continues, the leader walked May to the middle of the pine needle covered clearing. He instructed us to pray for her spirit, to ask her spirit for permission to take her life. No, 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 her spirit was saying, but nobody seemed to recognize what May was really saying. And Mike says, and also to give thanks for her generous sacrifice. I closed my eyes and prayed quietly to myself. I asked the spirit of May to allow us to be nourished by her flesh. I thanked her for making the ultimate sacrifice for us, and I asked for her spirit to be well cared for. I was scared and sad, but strangely at ease. I put my hands on her head. I gently petted and comforted her. I'm sure she was quite comforted as the blade went across her throat. Then this feeling arose deep inside me. I felt as if she knew what was going on and had made peace with it. Yeah, what rationalization is this, huh? In that moment, I felt connected to her life and impending death, and just as her fear seemed to be gone, so was mine. Then it was over. Well, your fear could be gone, Mike, because the knife wasn't coming to your throat, was it? In that moment, I experienced for the first time in my life what it means to truly honor and connect to the life of the animal I was to consume. It illustrates to me the way that mechanized killing of animals in mass slaughterhouses is so out of balance with the health of our souls and our planet. Yeah, of course, it's better for our souls to kill the individual one at a time rather than that mechanized. In that moment, I felt deeply united with May, with all animals and with all life. Let's kill them all! I was sad and grateful. I was profoundly at peace with the beautiful but brutal reality of life and death. There are steps that we can take in our everyday lives to ensure that our consumption of animals occurs, he continues, in a mindful, honorable way. Yeah, right? One is to honor and bless the animal that gave its life. Mike keeps calling animals its. If he would call May, you know, she or her, perhaps he wouldn't be, you know, part of taking her life there. Before eating, take a moment to contemplate the animal, its life, as he says again, its death, its unique gifts and powers. How about her life, her death, her gifts, her powers? Ask its spirit for permission to be nourished by it. Rarely do you get permission, considering all of the health concerns of eating meat. The permission, I don't think, is being granted. Give thanks for its generous sacrifice and ask that its spirit be well cared for in life and in death. It is important to know that organic, free-range, and natural meat products are the best to use, although that's a farce also. And the people participating in these industries are more likely to respect and honor the animal in life as well as in death. Yeah, right. Organic animals can be inoculated. Free range is meaningless. As consumers, every time we buy from them, we increase the number of animals in their care, leading up to the ultimate betrayal, thus increasing the number of animals that receive respect and honor. let's see. There are also certain types of fish that are sustainably harvested. I love that word, harvested, for murder, promoting healthy ecosystems. Information about sustainable fish products can be found at, he gives some website here you don't need to know, to be a conscious carnivore. To be a conscious carnivore, to me, is to be unconscious, is to identify with the life of the animal, to love it with all your heart, to fully embrace your participation in its death, to connect with a bottomless gratitude for the ultimate and generous sacrifice it has made, and then to let the spirit and flesh of that being enter and literally become one or yoke, yoga, with you. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it, Mike. And in fact, I had to write Mike a note back. And by the way, coming up in just a little bit here, we'll be talking to Dr. Ray Greek about vivisection and the fraud that it is. But I just want to take a moment to let you know about the correspondence I had then with Mr. Stokes. So I emailed him, mike@freedomyoga.com. Mr. Stokes, I just read your astonishing and incredulous piece in Yogi Times and will be compelled to comment on it on my radio show, Go Vegan with Bob Linden, which you can hear Sunday at 1:30 p.m. in the Los Angeles area on KTYM AM 1460. The rationalization and hypocrisy are beyond belief, and frankly, I can't understand why a respected publication would print such thoughtless trash. That you, quote, believe that it is possible for there to be harmony between the practice of eating meat consciously and mindfully and living a yogic life, end quote, shows that you are neither conscious nor mindful. There is no harmony in torture and murder, no matter how you try to validate your addiction, as you twist ahimsa into an excuse for your weakness and inability to live the concept and first precept. And your argument is equally weak. You say that, quote, every time we break a blade of grass, we have harmed or killed another life form, equating that to the killing of a cow or pig or chicken or the lamb you use as an example. That blade of grass does not have a central nervous system, nor did it have a face or a mother, nor does it cry out for its life to be spared in your violent betrayal of ahimsa. It's, I would say, her life. I strongly suggest that you explore the study of Jainism, from which springs the yogic tradition of ahimsa and its compassion for sentient beings, which you have so unconsciously bastardized. I swear, I thought I was reading the kind of propaganda we get from George W. Bush, where up is down, left is right, war is peace. You use words like honesty and courageously in rationalizing your diet of death. By connecting ourselves consciously and lovingly to the life and death of the animals we eat, we can honor the animal's sacrifice. Are you sure you're getting enough blood flow to your brain? Maybe a few extra headstands would help, for your honesty is self-delusional, and your characterization of killing love lovingly redefines conscious thinking. You would be more honest to admit your bloodthirstiness and your membership in the barbaric cult of animal sacrifice rather than trying to convince readers of some incomprehensible spiritual enlightenment that comes from making your stomach a graveyard for cadavers. The only honesty in your writing, O great Ahimsa Killer, is when you say, I had felt like a hypocrite for a long time since I was a yogi, but also a meat eater. Well, why did you feel that way? Was it because it was true? You say that you had tried vegetarianism many times, yet for a variety of reasons it hadn't worked for you. I'm sure that the poor lamb in your article wished that you would have tried harder. Quote, the act of taking an animal's life for the sake of nourishing our bodies can be a sacred and conscious act, end quote. Sorry, murderous yogi, but when you are diagnosed with heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, arthritis, salmonella, or listeria, or campylobacter poisoning, mad cow disease, etc., 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 perhaps you will become consciously aware of just how nourishing the body of the murder victim is. Your story of May, the murdered lamb, is sad and perverted. Supposedly, you asked her for permission to take her life and thank her for her sacrifice. Did you listen to her answer? I'm sure that she would have said no to your selfish, violent, and bloody request. Animals love life and abhor pain just as you do. You thanked her for making the ultimate sacrifice. I'm sure she appreciated that as she was stabbed, beheaded, and dismembered, and you overcame your fear of the murder, proud of your courage to face and embrace the killing. Courage or cowardice. Thanks for your advice later in the article for excuses for readers who themselves are too spiritually weak to embrace Ahimsa and to be fully and joyously vegan, vegetarian. You say, honor and bless the animal that gave its life, give thanks for its sacrifice, etc. I think that one of the problems clouding your consciousness is that you keep referring to animals as it instead of him or her. An animal is someone, not a thing. Your recommendations for free-range and organic meat and sustainably harvested fish further demonstrate a lack of knowledge and understanding of cruelty and environmental and health issues. You conclude, quote, to be a conscious carnivore is to identify with the life of the animal, to love it with all your heart. Mr. Stokes, if you were conscious in any way, you would conclude that if you love animals with all your heart, you would never eat them. Please, Mr. Stokes, be a true yogi. Go vegan. And then I just got a letter back from Mr. Stokes. I'll do that quickly. Bob, at this moment, I do not have the time to fully respond to your letter, but I will say a few things. I appreciate your opinion. I do not think that my opinions are the right ones, only one path of many. I will consider what you have said and look at where I may be being weak, fearful, and hypocritical, as you suggest. I don't claim to be strong and courageous. I simply do the best I can given the place I am in life today. Most of my reasoning around eating meat comes from my experience with Native Americans and other tribal cultures. I know that it can be argued that tribal hunting cultures are barbaric, but it can also be argued that they have a wisdom about being connected to nature that runs very deep. I am not trying to change your mind. I know that is futile. I just hope you would tolerate another way of life. I have one thing to say to you that you certainly will not like, which I think is fair since the tone of your letter was, to say the least, not nice. George Bush is a rigid fundamentalist, and that is his weakness. You speak with the same lack of tolerance of other points of view when it comes to vegetarianism, and he speaks of when it comes to war. That is fine. I don't even have a problem with that. But if you want to compare someone to George Bush, you might want to take a long, hard look in the mirror before you start comparing others to him. I look forward to your response and dialogue. We can come to deeper harmony. Anyway, yeah, well, so I won't go into my response to his response and all of that. But needless to say, I got a response from Yogi Times, and they want me to write an article that will appear in the March issue. So I better get the cliff notes on yoga and put something together there, and we'll talk Ahimsa and look for that article to come out in the March issue of Yogi Times. And we will continue. We will talk to Dr. Ray Greek momentarily on the planet's first and only commercial vegan radio show, Go Vegan with Bob Linden. And you can make a tax-deductible donation, like I hope that our friend will, the Armstrong Williams agent. Hope he got the address right. Checks payable to Go Vegan, mail to P.O. Box 220025, Newhall, California, 91322. If the word vegan is new to you and you've been holding back for 4 years, not writing a check to the show because, well, how do you spell vegan? V-E-G-A-N. If you want to call me, it's 818-623-6477 or email me at meatfreeamerica@yahoo.com. Talking about how delicious Veggianese is. No vegan kitchen should be without it. It dresses up even the simplest foods, like my favorite sandwich, avocado, tomato, and Veggianese. Or is it mashed up chickpeas, celery, onions, and Veggianese? Or a tofu burger with Veggianese? Well, I do know I love it on baked or steamed yams. Well, you think you'd read about Veggianese in a cookbook, it winning the American Tasting Institute Award? So I was surprised to see Veggianese in a book about stroke prevention. Yet there it is, page 194, in Stroke Free for Life by David Weber's MD, Chair, Cerebrovascular Diseases, and Director, Stroke Research Center, Mayo Clinic. And who would know better about a Mayo alternative? Try Veggianese, now in organic. Available at Follow Your Heart, Canoga Park, California, and natural food stores everywhere. And also from Follow Your Heart, make sure you get vegan gourmet cheese alternatives. They melt, 4 different varieties. So you want pizza, get the mozzarella. It will melt. You'll enjoy the pizza. There's cheddar and nacho, Monterey Jack, all vegan. None of the scary dairy properties to it. Totally vegan. And you will enjoy vegan gourmet cheese alternatives immensely.
Oh, no. Going to give it to people. Animal burger.
Well, if you're a vegan who needs a set of wheels, you want to be treated right, head on over to Bear Auto. Bear Auto, 1944 South Santa Fe Drive in Vista. The phone number is 760-597-1600. Open 7 days a week with hundreds of recycled cars available for you. Also boats and collector cars. Also, you can see the entire inventory at bearautosales.com, BEAR autosales.com. And you can also get directions at the website and information on in-house financing, because Bear Auto will take care of you if you're a vegan. Extra special deals because, well, say hi to Gary. He's a vegan, and there are PETA posters on the walls, and Bear Auto buys cars, will give cash, and no high pressure except from the two rescued sales poodles, Chet and Lewis. But I think you're going to be happy with your visit to Bear Auto, 1944 South Santa Fe Drive in Vista.
Mommy, Daddy, no circus. It's hurts animals.
And if you want to help animals, children, and the environment, I recommend you visit the website projectace.net. Projectace.net. You're already paying bills every month for phone and utilities, gas, electric, internet connection, etc. And all of that goes to the nameless, faceless corporations without any money coming to help animals, children, and the environment. Now a percentage of that can go to help the causes that concern you most. Check out the website. It's projectace.net, projectace.net.
Bob Linden.
And we continue on the planet's first and only commercial vegan radio show, a project of 501c3 nonprofit public charity International Humanities Center. So your donations are tax deductible. So today I am very happy to have a guest returning who has been with us before. Dr. Ray Greek. Ray Greek, MD, is a physician who was board certified in anesthesiology and subspecialty certified in pain management. He was an instructor at two of the United States' most prestigious medical schools and has published in medical literature. He has performed experiments on animals in the past and has done research with humans. Along with his wife, who is a veterinarian, he has written three books on the scientific fallacy of attempting to extrapolate the results of animal experiments to humans. The books, Sacred Cows and Golden Geese, that was their first. The foreword was written by Jane Goodall. Then Specious Science addressed the issue in a little more scientific depth. And What Will We Do If We Don't Experiment on Animals? 2004 book examines the research modalities available instead of animals. He's president of Americans for Medical Advancement, a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to educating the public about the hazards of extrapolating the results of experiments on animals to humans. Welcome back again, Dr. Ray Greek. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent. Terrific. Good to have you here again. So educate us a little bit, because the world seems not to know much about what great dangers fall upon us because of animal experimentation. I don't know, just recently it seems like there was a lot in the news. You had Vioxx in the news, Celebrex, all of these drugs that, yeah, I've heard the commercials, that commercials with songs from my childhood, Celebrate, yeah, all of that. And apparently they've been tested on animals, and apparently people are now having very increased risks of heart disease and all sorts of problems. So what's wrong with animal experimentation, and Dr. Greek?
Well, Vioxx and the other drugs that you mentioned are very good examples. Those drugs worked very well for thousands of people, and on the other hand, hundreds and probably thousands of people were harmed by those drugs. So why is that? Well, the reason is that each of us has a different genetic makeup. And even if we have exactly the same genes, those genes are turned off or turned on in a different manner. So you're Bob Linden and I'm Ray Greek, and that's the difference between us. It's how our genes are expressed. So a drug that harms me may not harm you, and vice versa. And therein lies the fallacy of testing drugs on animals. If I cannot predict what a drug is going to do for you, how in the world is a chimpanzee or a monkey or a dog or a mouse going to predict whether the drug will be toxic for you?
Well, have we cured cancer in the mouse yet?
We've cured cancer in the mice in the mouse many, many times. But what's more scary, Bob, and this gets back to what you were saying earlier, is that the National Cancer Institute actually believes that we have lost cures for human cancer because they did not work in the mouse. And so that's the problem with trying to extrapolate results from animals to humans. It's even the problem trying to extrapolate results from one human to another. What we need is to base our medications and our cures and our treatments and so forth on a person's genetic makeup, on your specific genetic makeup, not my genetic makeup, not your brother's genetic makeup, but on yours. And we're on the verge of doing that. Indeed, today there have been treatments that have been designed for a specific genotype. And those are the drugs that are going to be the future of tomorrow.
Hmm. Could you remind us of some of the inconsistencies of past testing on animals, where we thought it would work but didn't, or it did work on animals but didn't work on humans? Or
well, thalidomide, of course, is probably the most notorious example. It was a medication given to pregnant women that resulted in their having offspring that had very abbreviated limbs. Perhaps they had no legs and no arms. Perhaps they just had a short arm with a hand coming off the shoulder. A very infamous drug. That drug was tested eventually on hundreds of different kinds of animals, and only very rarely did those animals suffer from that particular birth defect. So that's one example of a drug that harmed approximately 10,000 children.
I remember that.
It was tested extensively on animals, would have passed all the tests.
So the animals passed all the tests, and then it seemed like there were unbelievable deformities in the children who were born.
Exactly. They were born without legs, without arms, and so on and so forth. So that's an example of a drug that passed many, many animal species with flying colors, but went on to harm humans. Mm-hmm. And there are examples of the opposite. Cyclosporin A is a medication that we use for transplant recipients, people who are getting a kidney transplant, a liver transplant, and so forth. And it didn't work out very well in a lot of the animal species that were tested. So had we relied on the animal data in that case, the whole field of transplant surgery would have been set back possibly 10, 20 years. And again, if you look through our books, there are many such examples. And one really has to question, you know, how many more people have to die before society wakes up and decides that testing on animals is not what the vested interest groups claim that it is.
Right. Well, people can go to your website, curedisease.org, it is?
Curedisease.com.
I'm sorry. Curedisease.com. And I mean, there's a lot of interesting information there. You say smoking was thought non-carcinogenic because smoking-related cancer is difficult to reproduce in lab animals. I mean,
and that's a myth that carries through even today. If you see the big tobacco executives testifying before Congress, or if you see some of the shills for industry who are in Congress, they will still say that it has never been proven that cancer is a result of smoking. And what they mean by that is the fact that not all animals who are exposed to cigarette smoke develop cancer.
Ah.
So that's a very good example right there. Another one, which I think you'll like, is the fact that a high-fat, high-cholesterol, meat-based diet results in heart disease. Just the opposite happened in the animals that were tested. Matter of fact, in the old days, when a patient had a heart attack or a myocardial infarction, the diet that a lot of doctors put the person on was a high-fat, high-cholesterol, meat-based diet. Today, we know that's the wrong thing to do, but it was based on human studies, not because of the animal studies.
Wow, that is truly amazing. You also say more than half of the 198 new medications released between 1976 and 1985 were either withdrawn or relabeled secondary to severe unpredicted side effects.
Exactly. And more recent data would be between 1997 and 2001. There were 10 drugs that were taken off the market. 8 of the 10 drugs were taken off the market because of side effects that occurred primarily in women. And again, this is an example of drugs that men took and did well with the drugs, but when women took the drugs, they had strokes, they had heart attacks, they died, and so on and so forth. So again, if a man cannot predict what a drug is going to do to a woman, how on earth is a completely different species going to be able to make that prediction? It just defies logic and reason.
Wow. Now, you, at one point you had to wake up to this, right? I mean, you were in the established medical field, and your history has animal testing behind it. Was there something that woke you up one day and you said, wait a second, this is all a farce?
Yes, it really was an epiphany. My wife is a veterinarian, and she would come home and we would discuss various treatment options for various diseases. And what we noticed was that we never agreed. What was a good treatment option for a dog may not work for a human, or vice versa. A good treatment option for a human may not work for a dog. And even the diseases, some diseases that were lethal in humans were not lethal in dogs, and so on and so forth. And so this really set us back because we were both big fans of animal experimentation, you know, the necessary evil, and so on and so on. And we studied the subject for about 10 years, and that's when we wrote our first book. But yes, it really is ingrained into society, and it's particularly ingrained into medical students and science students that animal experimentation is the be-all and end-all. And in reality, it does more harm than good.
Yeah, I believe that weren't there some surveys of medical professionals that it was close to 99% or 100% believed that animal experimentation was necessary, but that opinion seems to be changing a bit now.
Well, it was probably never 99%. That survey was done by the American Medical Association, and it was directed towards people whose livelihood in some way benefited from animal experimentation. And there's no doubt if you survey the tobacco industry, you'll get 99% of people who say that cigarette smoke doesn't cause cancer. So that particular poll was very biased from the outset. We recently conducted a poll in Europe And we had roughly two-thirds of the respondents say that they questioned the use of animals in biomedical research. They thought that there were better methods. They didn't trust the results from animal experimentation and so on and so forth. And those were practicing physicians also. So regardless of the cause, yes, there are certainly a lot of physicians today, I would say the majority, who do not think that animal experimentation is a necessary evil.
Yeah, I remember some months back I quoted, there was an article in the British Medical Journal last February. The article was entitled, "Where is the evidence that animal research benefits humans?"
Exactly. That was an article by Pandora Pound and her group in England, and they did a very nice study. And there have been many other articles written since that time. There's even a new journal, approximately 2 years old, called the Journal of Translational Medicine. And there have been a lot of articles in these journals that have questioned the use of animals from a scientific perspective. Again, not from an ethical perspective, but from a scientific perspective. And people are simply saying, you know, this doesn't work. Ever since the war on cancer was declared in 1970, the number of animals used in the United States has just skyrocketed. It's probably well over 100 million today per year. And what have we gotten for it? Not much. And I would argue that, in fact, the harm has been far greater than the good to humanity. And that doesn't count the animal suffering.
So 100 million animals per year.
And that number will probably go up because now we're using a lot more transgenic mice. And they're producing those mice at very high rates. And unfortunately, it probably takes 100, maybe 1,000 mice to produce the one mouse that has the proper genetic makeup. So those other 999 will be killed. So, yeah, I think the numbers are going to do nothing but skyrocket here over the next decade.
But isn't there a financial basis for all of this testing, all of the grants and research that comes from the government? So who wants to give it up even if we get no results? A lot of people seem to be getting rich from it.
That's exactly right. And even if they're not getting rich, they're certainly making a very comfortable living. And who's really getting rich are the universities. I mean, they're able to charge the researcher who does the animal experimentation a lot of money for rent, which is really a bogus charge. It's not like the building is going somewhere if it is not containing animals. But, yeah, there's a lot of people that are making a lot of money on this. It's a big business, and right now the whole Institute of Medical Research is based on it. So it's going to be a very, very tough nut to crack. It's going to be very difficult to get society to understand enough about science to realize that it's all a farce.
Now, you know, if I say to somebody, you know, like the title of that article, "Where's the evidence that animal research benefits humans?" Somebody will always say, "Well, how about the polio vaccine, right?"
Sure. A lot of people say a lot of things that they don't really understand or fathom and that are, in point of fact, wrong. The polio vaccine was delayed for decades because of bogus research that was conducted in animals. It was not until the polio virus was grown in vitro or in a petri dish that scientists were able to come up with the vaccine. So you do hear a lot of answers to that question. Well, the polio vaccine or this drug or that treatment or whatever. But when you really dig into it, and that's what my wife and I did for 10 years, you find out that those explanations are wrong. They're just factually incorrect. It's not a matter of opinion. It's not a subjective thing. All you have to do is read the textbooks, read the medical literature, and you find out that those people are just wrong.
Are people wrong to be sending money every year to the Jerry Lewis Muscular Dystrophy Telethon?
Well, if they have more money than they know what to do with, they're welcome to it. But muscular dystrophy is one of those diseases that we've spent, as a society, billions of dollars on, mainly through the Jerry Lewis Telethon. And regardless of the intentions of the people like Jerry Lewis, that's been a waste of money. We've had essentially no progress in the area of muscular dystrophy, in large part because we fund so much research that's based on animal models of muscular dystrophy. So what I like to ask people is, you know, how many more people have to die before we give up this failed paradigm? And that's really a very good question, because that is what the results of experimenting on animals are. That's what it amounts to.
So what would your methods be? If we could change the world tomorrow and move away from experimentation on animals, what should What should the medical field be doing?
There are myriad options, and that's what we wrote our entire third book about, was what are the options that medical research has. But to sum it up succinctly, I would make it human-based. And when I say human-based, I mean, if you want to learn about Alzheimer's disease, you need to conduct studies that involve human beings or the brain tissue of human beings. And today, we have so many technologies available, PET scans, functional MRI scans, brain biopsies, and so on and so forth. And most of these things, with the exception of brain biopsies, are non-invasive, they're not painful, they're not dangerous, and you actually get data from a real human being, as opposed to from a monkey who doesn't suffer from Alzheimer's disease. So to go from treatment based on monkeys to treatment based on humans would be a big step. And then, of course, the next step would be to base your treatment on the person's genetic makeup, so that I may receive one drug for high blood pressure. You will not receive that drug, Bob, because you would have an adverse side effect. And we can predict a lot of that even today, based on our knowledge of a person's genetic makeup. But that's where more research needs to be done. So that's how I would fund medical research.
And what about stem cell research?
Stem cell research is very controversial from an ethical perspective. From a scientific perspective, it's not controversial. It works, period. We've now given stem cells to people suffering from various forms of cancer. They have a much higher cure rate than other types of treatment. So for people suffering from diseases like Huntington's, Parkinson's, MS, Alzheimer's, the only cure on the horizon, the only treatment on the horizon is stem cells. And again, that's not to say stem cells are perfect. You know, it's a very new technology. It's still in development. It still has a long way to go. But if you're doing billions of dollars worth of experiments on animals every year, that's billions of dollars that are not going to be used for stem cell research. And so those cures are just going to be further and further away.
Right. And for some people, just if those dollars were diverted to tell them to eat a vegan diet or stop smoking or, you know, decrease the amount of alcohol consumption for pregnant women, like with the March of Dimes, you know.
Oh, sure. Right. If prevention is certainly the best treatment. Prevention is the best form of medical care available. Unfortunately, nobody makes any money from that. So you will not find a lobbying organization on Capitol Hill selling preventive medicine, selling, you know, don't smoke, don't drink to excess, do certain things when you're pregnant, have certain medical tests on an annual or basis, and so on and so forth, because nobody makes money from that.
Maybe the broccoli farmer would.
if they all got together, maybe they'd sell more broccoli.
Right. We're talking to Dr. Ray Grieg. He's with Americans for Medical Advancement. And you can go to the website, which is curedisease.com. And, you know, we only have a couple more minutes, but a number of stories come across my desk quite often. And lately, what I find shocking is that it seems like researchers have been known to manipulate results to get what they're seeking.
That, unfortunately, that does happen. It happens in animal-based research more easily than it does human-based research, but there's unethical people everywhere. The problem, another problem with experiments on animals is it's just so easy to manipulate the data. It's difficult to predict, to manipulate human-based data because there's so many people involved in the project. With animal-based studies, sometimes there's only one person doing the entire thing. And especially if you're working for a drug company and the drug company is giving you a large sum of money to prove that their drug is safe, oh, that's easy to do with animals.
Wow. Well, that's kind of scary that our whole medical profession is based on bogus knowledge to a great extent.
Unfortunately, but it is the case.
Okay. Well, we have about a minute. Did I miss anything that you wanted to talk about today, or...?
No, I would just revise the last statement. You know, our entire medical system is not based on bogus knowledge. The treatments and cures that we do have today came from human-based studies.
Yeah.
So the good parts of medicine, the cures and the treatments and the diagnostic equipment like MRI scanners, those came about not because of animal studies, but despite them. So we do have a good track record in medical research as long as we do the right thing. And the right thing is not using animals.
Right. Well, I've had people say to me, oh, so you want to experiment on people first? You know, oh, yeah. But actually, I guess anytime even if a drug is tested on animals, really the first time it is tested on humans, it's kind of the first time, because you're saying
even,
you can't extrapolate.
Even the 1 millionth time a person takes it, he's still being experimented upon. Because, again, just like with Vioxx, hundreds of thousands of people took Vioxx very successfully. The thousands of people were harmed by it. So, again, we cannot base treatments on another species. We can't even base treatments on another individual. It has to be based on your genetic makeup.
Okay. Well, I invite people to explore this subject by going to the website for Dr. Ray Greek. It's curedisease.com. Check it out, Americans for Medical Advancement. And Dr. Greek, thank you so much for being with us again on Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
Always enjoy it, Bob. Thanks so much.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to have you here. Okay. We should have... continue momentarily here on Go Vegan with Bob Linden, the planet's first and only commercial vegan radio show. Okay, well, I want to tell you about a great place to go. Rancho's Natural Foods Market at 3918 30th Street in North Park in San Diego, announcing that except for its raw wild honey that seems to be in demand by some of the raw food advocates, the entire Rancho's Natural Foods Market is now vegan. The deli with delicious entrees and soups. I was just there this week. I had maple glazed seitan. That was so delicious. Coconut rice. The salad bar is fantastic. It's organic, raw dressings there. The soup has been great, you know, the chilly, rainy weather. Head on over there. Some fantastic soups that you can get at Rancho's Natural Foods Market. And your produce and bulk items and juice bar, organic wheatgrass juice, even organic salsa. Vegan pastries are available from the fantastic We Make It Vegan. And Rancho's Natural Foods Market welcomes all raw food enthusiasts with a wide selection at 3918 30th Street. And don't forget, Rancho's right next door. And I didn't forget it. I had eggplant enchiladas there this week. Quite delicious. Rancho's Cocina Mexican and Vegetarian Cuisine at 3910 30th Street. And two other locations, 1830 Sunset Cliffs Boulevard and 4705 Point Loma Avenue, each with close to 100 vegan menu options, like enchiladas, the avocado or eggplant, which I said were delicious, tofu, tempeh, lentil or potato vegetable. It's just fantastic. Head on over to Rancho's Natural Foods.
MEATSTINKS. MEATSTINKS.
That it does. And if you're a vegan and you're looking for the footwear to prove it, might I recommend you check out Earth Vegan Footwear. I'm wearing mine all the time. It's just phenomenal. The most comfortable shoes I've ever worn. And you want to check them out? Go on over to All Vegan, 4669 Park Boulevard. University Heights with the these shoes are so incredibly comfortable. It's the Calso Negative Heel technology designed by Danish yoga master Anne Calso. Your head is straight back, your shoulders roll back, your spine and pelvis align, your breathing and balance improve, your toes spread and relax, back pain dissipates, all from these incredibly comfortable shoes that are certified vegan by the UK Vegan Society. You can go to the website, earthvegan.us, check out all the styles and colors. You can order from the website if you so desire. The casuals for men and women, I have a couple of pairs now that are my most comfortable shoes ever, and well, when you get a pair, you'll know why, too. 877-746-3364, 877-746-3364 is the toll-free number for Earth Vegan. And check them out. You're going to love them. It just brightens your day when those shoes are comfortable, your feet feel good, you got happy feet from your Earth Vegan footwear.
A, B, C, D, E, cool, Y. Eat that meat and you will die.
Oh, I did want to tell you about St. Nicholas Hope for Animals. Oh, where did I put that? Coming up this Thursday, Thursday is the counter-inauguration demonstration in Westwood at the Federal Building on Wilshire at the 405 starting at 6 p.m. That's this Thursday on the 20th, the day of the coronation. Next Saturday, you can hear me. I'll be on the Cerritos College radio station. You can go to WPMD, like watermelon, potato, melon, daikon, WPMD.org. I'll be on for 4 hours. I will be debating a conservative on there. I'm out of time. The show is over. Gotta go. Thanks for listening to Go Vegan with Bob Linden.